we're starting to see, which is actually quite disheartening, we're seeing companies not investing in training their employees on the AI tools. And it's disheartening because the employees that work there, they know the company the best. They know the ICP, the go-to-market, all the unique use cases. So if companies just spent the investment, right, to train their employees, they could have something phenomenal. But that's not what's happening.
Angelie, hey, welcome back to CMO Convo. Happy to have you here as my guest. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's nice to be back here. It's a fabulous community and really excited for our discussion today.
Me too. We have like a super exciting topic. Mm-hmm. But before we kind of like dive in, I would be happy if you can just give a bit of a background about yourself and share your story, if you don't mind.
Of course. So for all the listeners, I'm Angelie Mullins. I am a chief marketing, chief growth, chief revenue, chief commercial, all the above. I've been in Berlin for the past 5 years, but I originally come from California and I have a 20-year experience of marketing, sales, go-to-market, international expansion. I've scaled 3 big tech companies and 3 scale-ups, and one of them has become a unicorn, which is fantastic. And I've seen most of it, is what I would say, the successes, the failures, what works, what doesn't work, and everything in between. So,
I studied it. Sounds like quite a journey and also like a very interesting journey as well, you know. So pretty much you've done everything, I think, from startups to enterprises to scale-up, international roles, different countries, different locations. So that's awesome. And having that in mind, I mean, so we think we've all noticed that the marketing landscape has changed rapidly, especially in the last, I would say, 12 months. And everything is kind of like being more consolidated towards revenue and GTM. And I would love to hear maybe a bit about your thoughts, like how is GTM looks like in these rapid changes? What's your take on it?
Yeah, so go-to-market is completely evolving right before our very eyes. And it always used to be, if we kind of go back in our Wayback Machine 5 to 10 years ago, it was this whole tug of war between marketing and sales and who has the leads and who's making sales. Now everything is starting to consolidate. So what you see now is, instead of just marketing, sales, and after sales, you see something called the go-to-market engineer, and a person that's supposed to really be doing everything. It's kind of interesting because on the executive level, they started consolidating. So now they have on the commercial side, a chief commercial officer, which is basically marketing, sales, and CS combined. And on the product and tech side, the CPTO, which is basically product and engineering combined. But now in go-to-market specifically, they want one person to really engineer everything. And now with the rise of AI, it's actually possible to make that happen. We're also seeing the shift. We had KPIs, revenue per FTE. I think that's still a very popular KPI in a lot of startups and scale-ups. But now we're starting to see high ARR, MRR companies with very limited amount of employees. So if you look at the Lovables of the world, different companies like this, the standard is now between 20 to 30 employees. So just think about across the organization, what does that mean? That you're supposed to have very high level and skilled people managing a lot of AI tools and doing quite a bit.
So that sounds very futuristic. And I would love to, you know, deep dive into that. But maybe we can, you know, before we kind of like go deep, maybe we can still stay at the high level. When we're talking about go-to-market and GTM, and a lot of people use that term, and it's becoming a buzzword, what does that actually mean? How does go-to-market looks like? Maybe, you know, you can describe a picture for me.
Yeah. And the first thing I want to say with this is, if you look on LinkedIn or Substack or, you know, wherever you read, you'll see all these GTM playbooks floating around.
There's tons. I think the GTM now is like, I didn't check like Google Trends, but definitely it's on the rise as a trendy keyword as well.
So what I want to say is, some of the playbooks are great, some of them are not great, mm-hmm. but I'm not necessarily a believer in a one playbook for everything. For me, what go-to-market is, it's the critical thinking approach of how you identify how to take a company to market, who their customers are, what your ICP is, your ideal customer profile, what your USP is, your unique selling proposition, and how do you make it land? Not so that you just have a quick win or you have your first 10 clients, but that you make it land for the long term. So this is really the true essence of going to market. It's the best of marketing and branding and sales and customer support, onboarding. It's the best of all of it. But it's the critical thinking piece, which I really believe is actually starting to slip in these past couple of years, and especially now with the rise of all these GPTs, whichever one that you tend to use. And I think there's lots of statistics that, you've probably seen running around. People now that are using ChatGPT, how brain function is declining. So it's going to be quite interesting because the GPTs are here to stay and AI is here to stay. So this is why I always preach to anyone that will listen, use your critical thinking skills. It is not just about the latest playbook. Really figure out how to get your product market fit and then how to win clients for the long term.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about, the rise of GTM AI, right? Because that's now a new term as well. How does it look like to manage or to even build this type of strategy?
So first, you have to look to your org chart. On the sales side, which is really where the GTM engineering term first started, was on the sales side. You used to be able to scale, or you were supposed to scale with a lot of AEs and SDRs. And so if you were going from 1 to 10 million ARR, or 10 to 50 and 100, usually your traditional CRO or your chief sales officer would say, okay, I need X more AEs and X more SDRs, and you would scale that way. Now it's very different. Now you have in the org chart this one GTM engineer on top managing a bunch of these AI agents or AI tools. And that is replacing what we'll call like the bottom third tier layer of entry level commercial positions. On the marketing side, it hasn't quite shifted yet. Although, if you talk to a lot of content marketers and designers, et cetera, they'll tell you the impact, especially in content marketing, because everyone thinks that you just plug something into ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude and out comes your perfect content. It definitely helps, but it does not, again, replace the creativity and the strategy. So it hasn't hit the marketing side as dramatically as far as an org structure is concerned in the sales side, but it will. What it will look like soon enough is you're going to have what's called these AI strategists. So you'll have a marketing strategist at the top, or you'll have, let's say, a content strategist, or you will have something like a growth strategist, and they will also be managing AI agents and AI tools. So these are bigger shifts.
So this sounds very futuristic. So are we talking about something that will happen in the future, or from your perspective, is it already happening?
It's already happening. So even if you just take an anecdotal purview on LinkedIn on the jobs that are appearing, you'll notice on the sales, marketing, and CS side, the many times the word AI is actually quite fun. And try to figure out how many times you can see the word AI in the job descriptions, and you're going to see it everywhere. We're starting to see, which is actually quite disheartening, we're seeing companies not investing in training their employees on the AI tools. And it's disheartening because the employees that work there, they know the company the best. They know the ICP, the go-to-market, all the unique use cases. So if companies just spent the investment, right, to train their employees, they could have something phenomenal. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is you're seeing the Duolingo and the Klarnas of the world. Basically they're cutting their customer service departments. Duolingo thought that people could learn from AI bots languages. And then they got the rude awakening that guess what? People actually want to learn languages from humans and they want that human interaction. And Klarna on the CS side learned that their customer service, support department, all the KPIs actually crashed because it was not as up to speed as they thought. So it's quite an interesting thing. You asked the question about how fast or slow this transition will happen. I always point people back to this Anthropic CEO. He gave a stunning interview to Anderson Cooper on CNN. This was just a few weeks ago. So I'm telling everyone who will listen, just go into YouTube, type in Anthropic CEO, CNN, Anderson Cooper. It will pop up. It's free. You can watch it. He estimates 1 to 5 years, but when Anderson Cooper presses him on, okay, when is this happening? He's kind of upfronting that estimate. So between 1 to 3 years is when we're going to see this. And you can already see, very large enterprise legacy companies. Microsoft just laid off 19,000 people. This was just last
That's
week. You're starting to see these companies lay off people. And it's very interesting. When you see these layoffs, you always think, oh, maybe it's departments that are outdated. What we're going to start to see is it's going to start to hit very high level white collar roles. The first role that's going to be impacted dramatically is, guess what? A software engineer. These roles,
that is surprising.
It's going to be really, well, think about it. When you have a tool like Lovable, which you can go in and basically just vibe code whatever you want and it pops out everything, the software engineer role is going to be deeply impacted. And a lot of the experts online are basically saying this role could be diminished by at least 70% in the coming years. So I know that this role used to be the coveted role. In Silicon Valley, there would be, you know, talent wars for this role.
It's the holy grail. It's the holy grail.
It is. But I think this is the one thing, and we're in this, what we call this fourth technological age. The last age was the Industrial Revolution. Now we're in the fourth technological age. And this is what you're going to see happen. So I think this is coming. So please don't just take my word for it. Please go and watch the Anthropic CEO. He used to work for Sam Altman at OpenAI. He gives, again, a stunning interview. And when he's pressed, he's really kind of calling the red alert sign, basically saying this tidal wave of change is coming. And a lot of people either are not aware or they're not ready or both.
So let's talk a bit about the readiness aspect. If I'm now a marketing leader, what skills should I learn?
AI. But what does that mean? Learn how to prompt. So when you look at ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude or Google Gemini, it's all prompting. You don't need to learn how to code anymore, although I know there's probably a lot of people in the industry that would disagree with that statement. But I'll just say that for the average person who is not a software developer, you do not need to actually learn how to code anymore. What you need to learn how to do is to prompt. What is prompting? Prompting is basically instructing a GPT or a tool on what you want it to do. So an example, I had a lot of founders lately ask me to review their pitch decks. You know, is it good? Is it bad? Founders are always asking people, look at my pitch deck, right? I didn't have huge amounts of time to do it. And it's a very time consuming thing. So I thought to myself, okay, what can I do? I actually, took a Google course on prompting. It was a fantastic course. So for anyone out there, take the Google, course on this. And I was like, oh, I could do this. So I went into ChatGPT, created a custom GPT. It's called the Pitch Deck Evaluator. It's free on the GPT store. We can drop the link, here in the podcast. And I did it just all on prompting. And so I basically said, okay, act like an investor, give an investability score, make sure that you're evaluating the pitch deck on 6 peak criteria and basically tell, founders and startup leaders, how good or bad their pitch deck is. And I tested it out on quite a few founders and they love it. So all of this is done on prompting. So if you're a marketer, learn the basics of prompt writing, prompt skills. There are many courses out there that will teach you that are either free or very low cost. So it's not a huge investment to do this. And with prompting, it's practice, practice, practice. And it's not a perfect thing. So it's not like software coding that you have to learn this particular development language. It's in English, you're prompting, like it's super straightforward. It's just that people are not in the practice of doing it. So this is the one thing I could say for marketeers to do. The second is just to learn which AI tools will be ruling the future. So for example, everybody for SEO, it was Ahrefs, for quite a long time.
Yeah, SEMrush.
Now it's Surfer. Surfer is the leading SEO tool and looks like it will start to take over. So for video creation, my heart is going out to all the wonderful videographers and editors out there, because now with Google, Gemini VO3, the video creation is insane. You can literally put a prompt in, and I've seen on social media, people are creating short movies.
Yeah, I saw that as well. And they're becoming viral as well.
Exactly. For the listeners who are in Europe, VO3 hasn't quite hit Europe, but you can actually, there's a little loophole. If you go to FreePix and you get one of their, plans, it's not very expensive to sign up for a month, you can get access to VO3 because they use it and you can try it. So start to learn the top AI tools. The one caveat I do want to say here is, the AI tool rush, I'm going to call it the bull rush of AI tools right now. Any listener that has looked at AI tools for even 5 minutes has probably become completely overwhelmed because there are so many tools out there. It reminds me, for the listeners that live through the 90s and I saw the dot-com boom of all the companies, basically anything dot-com, it reminds me of the same thing where everybody's just going there, but we're going to start to see a consolidation of these tools. You're already starting to see it. There's rumors in the, tech industry right now that Apple is looking to buy Perplexity. You're starting to see a lot of tools are going to consolidate. So I would recommend for marketing leaders, focus on the top long-lasting tools that you think are going to be the winners. I also created a post about this, but just to be concise, Surfer for SEO, Canva Magic Studio, their AI piece is amazing. Jasper, as far as like an all-round, type of tool, is absolutely amazing as well. All of your GPTs, pick your poison as far as the GPTs are concerned. But the list goes on and on. But try to pick the ones that you think are going to be long lasting.
Yeah, from my perspective, I just feel as if there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise, and hence you really need to be focused on, okay, what is it that I want to achieve, and then how do I do it? But also start with the why, and then the how will kind of like find its way. A part of, instead of just testing different tools, and this is what I feel that people are doing. Let's talk a bit about the human layer. So where do you see humans, will still be heavily invested? So you've mentioned being much more strategic, for example, but are there any other skills that us human will need to invest or put more weight on with this revolution, actually, that we're experiencing?
Fantastic question, and one of my favorite topics. So, as humans, we can differentiate ourselves with our own voices. And it also brings into, the field one of my most favorite topics, which is brand. And I've been preaching about this for a long time. I know that, especially in the tech community, a lot of the investors, they've been telling their CEO and founders, oh, you don't need to do brand, it's fluff. You can't see the direct attribution of revenue and results right away. So, do product marketing, do any, push product, push marketing, do sales-led organizations, do everything but, basically brand. So the tide is changing and the table is completely turning now. Because what's going to happen is with the GPTs, everyone's going to try to be fighting about how to rank in the GPTs. It's going to be a war of figuring out as a human how to differentiate yourself when everybody is going to AI tools to figure out what the quote unquote truth is. And we are not yet clear. Everybody's also heard of the biases in these AI tools and the LLM models. And so, people, for example, I think Amazon, there was an article about Amazon had some hiring practices and some biases there. We can't be so naive to think that that's the only bias that's happening. And so, as humans, what we can do is we can control our personal brand and our personal narrative. We can control our critical thinking. An example I'll give is everybody remembers, for the most part, when Google Maps kind of came onto the scene and it was such a big deal. And I remember when I grew up, I actually had a paper map and I actually had to read that.
Me too.
Had to know landmarks and you had to kind of find your way around. And we were still using our brains. And if somebody dropped us in the middle of the city, we would still be able to kind of know what's happening. But now with Google Maps, it's like I feel like I can't go anywhere without it. And it's literally telling me turn right, turn left. And I just feel like that element of critical thinking has been completely obliterated. The same is going to happen with the GPTs. And we already see the rise of that. So instead of using critical thinking to come up with a go-to-market strategy or a brand strategy or a sales plan, people are just popping it into GPTs and it's just telling them what to do. Our job was supposed to be to have a critical thinking element to say the results that we just got from this GPT, is it correct? Does it make sense? Does it align? But we're not doing that. We're just taking it as face value and then we're just running with it. And I've seen, plenty of GPTs out there, that will help you create your go-to-market plan, that will tell you what to do for sales, calculate all kinds of things. Is that correct? Does it fit, right, your
Yeah.
business? And I think this is the critical thinking element that people are losing, but it's also the opportunity factor. Those of us who rise above it, it doesn't mean don't use GPTs. It doesn't mean don't use AI. It's here to say we should use it. But those of us that know how to use it, when to use it, how to use our brains, how to use critical thinking, how to read between the lines, how to challenge things, those are the people, I think, that are going to be what I would say the best positioned and the best placed moving forward. As a human, again, your unique voice, your brand. AI cannot take that away. It can't copy it. Yeah, it can't reproduce it. So this uniqueness will be here to stay for us.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. I think that having your own voice, it's one of the things that also no one can take from you. So a lot of people can learn different skills, but having your own voice and having a strong voice is something very important. And that leads me to another thing that you love doing in life, which is training women in tech about communication, about visibility. Maybe we can unpack this topic as well a bit. So what does that actually mean?
I did a podcast the other week and it was titled Be the Mentor That You Never Had.
Oh,
And
I love it.
yeah, growing up, I mean, I grew up in the States and there's a lot of great business leaders there, but it doesn't mean that you always have someone to show you the way, especially when you work in very male-dominated industries or very type A, kind of dominated industries that are super competitive. And as a woman, I was taught at a business school that you have to act like a man and think like a man and be one of the boys. And that's just not true. But I think
100% agree.
exactly. And women are finding now that not only is it not true, but it's not sustainable because you're not being your authentic self, right?
100%
Right. So
agree.
it's for us to be our authentic selves, and women hold power in being their authentic selves because the whole idea of men and women working together is we're supposed to be complementary, right? In talents, in skill sets, in the way that we carry ourselves and our personalities, but we were just trained to be carbon copies. And of course, that's not, it's not happening. It's not sustainable. So the first thing I teach women is to go back to your core strengths, go back to what makes you unique, go back to your sense of where you drop your power from and start from there. And I think that's the first thing. So kind of helping women rewrite and unwind some of the things that they were taught in business school, because I just think it's not, it doesn't work. And it, kind of goes back to the old like Jack Welch GE days when they were doing stack ranking and all this kind of crazy stuff, but just isn't working anymore in business. And I also think, after the COVID era and we kind of had this worldwide test of can people work from home? Can people work digitally? Yes, they can. And they can be more productive. I think it was a wake-up call for a lot of people saying, how do I balance my work in my life? What am I really doing? Does it really hold meaning? And we're also starting to see the rise, with the Gen Z. And I don't, which, what's the group that comes after Gen Z?
Alpha.
Okay. So with these, generations, they're kind of looking at the whole thing and they're just saying, we want value. It's not just going to work and spending 25 years and getting a watch. And actually, I watched my dad get the watch. And when he got it, I was like, that's all you got after doing this for so long. And there's actually a great social media. I'll have to drop the link for you because it was a talk show. And this woman explained it, correctly. She was just like, okay, the baby boomers are like, it's all about the money. The millennials are like, okay. I think it's about the money, but where is the money? And the Gen Z, they're like, what's money? So very interesting kind of transition that we're seeing.
It sounds as if we're really kind of like in a very strong transition point, not just because of AI, but also with different generations changing. I think that boomers are slowly, like having less percentage of being a working force. Millennials and Gen Z are now probably much more controlling the working force. What does that also actually mean with being authentic, having your own voice, being your own brand? What should we expect? How do we kind of like future-proof our career as well, if you have any thoughts on that?
It's a really, I would say, poignant and deep topic because in the baby boomer generation, and I would say the very institutional type of companies, you were taught and it was very encouraged to not have your own voice and to not have your own brand. And, even one of the mentors that I have, and she was an executive back in the 70s when that never happened almost for women. She used to work for IBM and she said you lived in, black blue for IBM. Now it's about finding your own path because especially in the startup and scale up universe, the average tenure of a role is about 2 years. And I would say if you're lucky, the people who are at a startup for 3 to 5 years, it's absolutely amazing, but it's almost like a unicorn phenomenon. I'm like,
it's an anomaly.
Right. We're like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? And then for the people who are very unlucky, you know, they're having roles for 3 months or 6 months. So the Gen Z cohort that I mentor, I say, look, if you want to stay in tech and you want to stay in the startup scale up universe, and you look at your first 10 years, if the average role is about 2 years, you're going to have 5 jobs. And there's still this stigma, and I want to say, and especially in Europe, there's still this stigma of people who have many roles. And employers are like, oh, we don't want to hire people because they have many roles. And my response is, wake up, the industry, you created this. The whole industry has created this. So back to your original question, though, how do you differentiate yourself? Having your own brand, having your own voice. And the reason I bring up kind of the history and the transition is because back in the baby boomers kind of time, you didn't do that. You were the company man or you were the company woman. Now in the millennials, they started to kind of break that mold a little bit. And you started to see individuals writing their own books, doing their own podcasts, breaking the mold. And then with, you know, Gen Z, they're really saying, hey, if I have to flip jobs every 2 years, because that's the way the industry is, you can no longer rely on a company for longevity. So it's me, myself, and myself. So that means that you have to start creating your own brand. You have to create your own voice. So I think you're really seeing the transition towards that. And also coupled with what we just talked about in the age of AI and GPTs, this is going to be one of the only ways that you can differentiate yourself, future-proof your career. The amount of content creators that we're seeing now and the amount of people in tech that are transitioning to freelance advisory, it's unheard of because people are realizing that the instability of the tech industry, it's just not sustainable. So it's really going to be interesting over the next 5 years as companies consolidate, AI tools take over, you know, what this is going to mean for people.
Yeah. Thank you very much for mentioning it. And I do want to add one more thing. I think that people are also searching for stability. I mean, when there's these huge waves that constantly, by the way, coming towards us, right? And I think that the first wave, or let's say the biggest one, was Corona. So how do you still find stability? The only way that you can do it is lean into yourself. And I think that, you know, also psychologically, that makes sense. So it's kind of like also manifesting into the world of work with being your own creator, being a consultant, or just being what I've heard a new phrase, a slasher. I'm a consultant slash, I don't know, like working part-time slash mentor slash whatever, you know? So like we are now seeing also this economic of slasher, basically.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think leaning into yourself, because I think that's also the generational transition that we're seeing where baby boomers, they found stability in their companies. And millennials.
In the roles. The roles was also the identity.
Exactly. Yeah. Where Gen Z, a lot of them are looking at the situation and they're just like, okay, this is a no-win situation, you know, because think in 20 years' time, if we took the average tenure of a tech wall, they would literally have 10 jobs. I mean, it's just that means that they're constantly interviewing and you can never settle in. So for them, they're looking at this and they're like, okay, you have to lean into yourself. And this is why we're seeing so many more self-employed people. So I would tell, especially when you look at the layoffs that happened last week at Microsoft, 19,000 people. And a lot of them had worked there for 20 years. And you're just seeing these sob stories of people basically saying, you know, I gave my life to this company and then look what happened. I think in the newer generations coming up, they're looking at these stories and they're saying, okay, well, this is not the winning formula anymore. So you have to lean into yourself, get as many skills as you can. Be as mobile and as adaptable as you possibly can. So for any of the younger generations or younger listeners, you know, I'm hearing this, don't be afraid to move cities. Don't be afraid to move countries. Go with where the opportunities are. Look at all kinds of different skills. And like you said, this slasher, like I'm a consultant or an advisor slash this slash that, have, you know, multiple income streams, do multiple things. Because that's the only way you're going to be able to get this sense of stability. Because over the next 1 to 5 years now, it's going to become, I would say, so unstable. And everything's going to be changing, like kind of sand shifting beneath your feet. People who are not on the front end of this, you know, are going to be very disappointed. And that's why I keep just please go and watch the Anthropic CEO interview with CNN, Anderson Cooper. I mean, the fact that they'll put this on national television on the news, I think should be like the biggest red flashing sign that you could ever see. And if he's saying this, right, he says, you know, 1 to 5 years, and then he's pressed, he's okay, 1 to 3 years. And you already see it happening with companies big and small. And just to be clear, the new gold standard of a high performing company is something that looks more like a lovable, you know, out of Stockholm, which is a high ARR, high growth company, but low headcount. And so you're starting to see these 20, 30 employee companies. So when you look at these huge companies like Microsoft and Amazon and Google that have thousands and hundreds of thousands of employees, that is no longer the norm, and it will not be the norm anymore.
By the way, that's also answers maybe, or at least partly, on how to future-proof our career, which is a question that I love to ask my guests in the podcast, by the way. But that is maybe the only way, like invest in ourselves, have different revenue streams, lean into ourselves, find our own voice and stick to it, you know, loud and clear. And yeah, that's a very interesting, you gave me a lot of food for thought. Thank you very much, Anjali. And I'm sure that also for our listeners. Before we wrap up, I would love to ask you, where can our audience find you, or where are you speaking next, especially for the people from Berlin here?
So I do a lot of public speaking for those of you in Berlin. You can always find me on LinkedIn. Super easy. I also have a website, anjalimullins.tech, but either way, very easy to get a hold of me. Where am I speaking next? So this month, I'm going to be speaking at Avalmind. So they are in Prenzlauer Berg. It's a really great group coming together. But I'm actually going to be a moderator of a panel all about marketing and brand growth. So it's going to be very exciting. So for any of you that would like to go to that, please let me know. But I will be doing lots of speaking. I've already done this year and will continue to do throughout the year. Like I said, I do go to market advisory, but I also mentor individuals in tech. And it's always a pleasure. I mean, really talking to people and giving them what I would say real world advice, I think is better. And for those of you that are looking for the latest playbook, I would say do not come to my, you know, I am not that person. You can find it on LinkedIn. There's a playbook for everything these days, but I will say playbooks change. Critical thinking is, you know, one of those skills that will, you know, last you a lifetime.
Amazing. Thank you very much. And I will for sure attend the event that you are speaking in. So Anjali, again, thank you very much for being a guest. It was one of the most exciting conversation that I had here, and I'm sure that the audience will appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.